The Man David by Brother Harry Tennant. Chapter 6. The Ark of the God of Israel. The life of Israel had a divine centre, a secret heart unseen by the eye of king and people. A wooden chest covered with gold, with a golden rim and a cover of solid gold, known as the mercy seat, which was in one piece with twin cherubim rising above it. The faces of the cherubim gazed inwards and downwards upon the blood-sprinkled place of divine acceptance. God was unseen, but the whole arrangement of the tabernacle and its service was designed to guide the mind of the true worshipper to the hidden glory, the promise and the prospect of things to come. From the vacant space between cherubim and mercy seat, the voice spoke, and the divine glory shone to illumine with unbearable brilliance the gold of the most holy place. In the fullness of time, the Word would become flesh, and the grace and the truth would shine forth on earth in a living person, whose likeness would be that of the Father. Meanwhile, the Lord God journeyed with the ark. Before David's day, the ark had suffered privations. The Philistines took it captive in the fateful battle against Israel in the days of Eli the priest. Uncircumcised men carried the ark into the house of Dagon, the fish god, a sign of triumph over their enemies, and it was hoped over Yahweh, their God. Though Israel was laid in the dust, Yahweh was unbowed, and Ashdod was no place for the ark of his testimony. One morning Dagon was found on his face before the ark and was quickly restored by his devotees, but all in vain, for the following morning he was found fallen again and in a sorry state, with hands and head separated from his fish-like body. The Philistines were disturbed and passed the ark from Ashdod to Gath and then to Ekron. As punishment followed possession of the divine furniture of the tabernacle of the Lord. There was no other course than to restore the ark to Israel, and at the same time to determine, if possible, that this was what Yahweh wanted. A new cart was made and attached to it two unlikely beasts, Cain, who had two young calves nearby needing their care. The ark was set on the cart, and the Philistines waited for a sign from the God of Israel. Without hesitation, and despite their mother instinct, the kine set course for Israel and kept to it until, crossing the border, they left the Philistine lords behind and arrived at Beth Shemesh. Beth Shemesh was one of the cities given to the priests, and its inhabitants cannot have been ignorant of the significance and holiness of the ark. They received it with joy, and making a fire of the cart, they offered the kine as a burnt offering to the Lord. But even so, their curiosity overcame them, and instead of providing a cover for the ark, they gave way to examination of it. The lips of priests and Levites should keep knowledge and not forget it. They suffered the consequence of their lack of holiness, when a sudden and sharp punishment destroyed some of them. And at this they exclaimed, "Who is able to stand before this holy Lord God?" Their question is one for all of us: who shall stand when he appeareth? This is Malachi's interrogation of those who claim to be the people of God. For the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can abide it? Joel 2 verse 11 and Malachi 3 verse 2. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Hebrews 12:28-29. These and many other scriptures must be read in association with those which speak of the great grace and mercy of God. We have need to keep in mind both the goodness and the severity of God, and thereby preserve a true balance of outlook. Beth Shemesh was no fit resting place for the ark. A final resting place would be chosen by God to replace Shiloh, upon which his judgment had fallen. An interim lodging was found for the ark in Kirjath-Jearim, or the city of the wood, otherwise known as Baal of Judah, in an old Canaanitish city which had been the home of some of the Gibeonites. The ark was resident there for a long time. At first sight, it would seem that 20 years was the length of the stay. But however, the ark was in Kirjath-Jearim throughout the reign of Saul, which was 40 years. Perhaps, therefore, the 20 years in 1 Samuel 7 verse 2 refers to the length of time which elapsed between the ark's first arrival in the town and the time of reformation under Samuel, described in the same chapter. Throughout the reign of Saul, the ark was neglected as a place of seeking divine counsel. The record in 1 Chronicles 13 verse 5 informs us that we inquired not at it in the days of Saul. Moreover, there was the strange divorce between ark and tabernacle. The latter, the tabernacle of the Lord, which Moses made in the wilderness, and the altar of burnt offering were at that season in the high place at Gibeon. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 29. Whatever had been the neglect of Israel over the years, David had not been party to it. His mind was wonderfully informed concerning the purpose and significance of the ark. He would have been fully in accord with the words of the books of Samuel and Chronicles in their very full description. The ark of God, which is called by the name, even the name of the Lord of hosts, that sitteth upon the cherubim. The covenant name of the bush and the throne of God was signified in the ark and cherubim and mercy seat. And for this reason, David believed it right to bring the ark to Jerusalem, where the visible throne was to be found. After consultation with the leaders, he sent an invitation throughout the land, from Hamath on the northern boundary, 100 miles or so beyond Damascus, down to Shihor, the boundary between Israel and Egypt. It's an interesting point for further study in determining whether Shihor is the same as Sihor, or the Nile, as in Jeremiah 2 verse 18. A great gathering of the people, such as had not assembled for many years for a religious purpose, came to witness the removal of the ark with the accompanying singing, strings, percussion and brass. A new cart had been prepared. The ark came forward from its resting place and moved toward Jerusalem. But the journey was cut short. As they came upon a threshing floor on the way to Jerusalem, the oxen stumbled, and it looked as though the precious ark would be thrown to the ground. Uzziah, one of the drivers of the cart, a son of Ahinadab, probably a Levite, made an effort to steady the ark. To everyone's amazement and dismay, Uzzah dropped dead. This was clearly a sign of the Lord's intervention. David was evidently displeased. The great congregation had gathered together for rejoicing and were breaking up in sorrow and bewilderment. Praise and psalms of music, perhaps specially composed for the occasion, were brought to an end, and the threshing floor, so often a place of joyful fellowship, became Peres Uzzah, the breach of Uzzah. The king moved from displeasure to fear. Truly the Lord was among them, but all was not well with the arrangements, and the Lord of hosts had made his judgment known. There are those who would like to expunge this incident from the face of the record, and others who would like to minimise the punishment which fell upon Uzzah, but this will not do. Who would want to invent a story of this kind concerning the most illustrious king ever to reign over Israel? The fact that it jars upon our thinking as it did upon David should suffice to tell us that there is a reason behind the occurrence. The Lord is not capricious in his behaviour. In the first place, David had done what the Philistines did when he prepared or allowed to be used a cart for the transportation of the ark. This was against the injunction of Numbers 4 verse 15 and 7 verse 9. The ark was to be carried on the shoulders of the priests. Moreover, it was to be borne by the sons of Kohath. These things the priests should have known. David was not unacquainted with the requirements of the law. The ark had a central importance in the worship ordained by God. Neglect concerning this would lead to neglect in other ways. The holiness of God must be respected. Obedience to his commands, as well in ritual as in personal behaviour, is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. This is what the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified.